Welcome to Electric Lawn Talk. Each week, the electric lawn care professionals get together to talk about the electric lawn and landscape business and have some fun along the way. Whether you are in the business, thinking of getting started, or just want to hear the tips, tricks, struggles, and victories of the move to electric, you are in the right place. Let's get started.
Hello, y'all, and welcome back to Electric Lawn Talk, where each week our panel of electric lawn care pros talk about what's hot and what's not in the up-and-coming world of electric lawn care and landscaping. My name is Jake with Green Team Denver out of Denver, Colorado, and I will be your host for Season 1, Episode 5. Who's joining me tonight?
Hey, this is Sandy with Electric Turf Pros.
This is Sean with Luminary Lawns.
This is Steven with EcoMo.
Daniel with Electron.
This is Jamar with Peaceful Lawn and Garden down here in Houston, Texas.
Very nice. It's great to be here with you gentlemen tonight. We have a great show for all our listeners tonight in which we will be laying out there for everyone the big question, what do we do in the winter, quote unquote, off season? Now, I know up here in Denver, we get winter full on, complete with that frozen white stuff that falls from the sky. I'd like to start off by getting an idea from y'all when your peak growth season is and when your slow season is. Jamar, do y'all have much of a winter off season down there in Houston, or is it still hitting 100 December through February?
Not quite 100, but it still gets nice and warm. So we don't have a winter. We have cold fronts. That's about as good as we get here. And it's usually some junk that got sent down from Denver because of some polar vortex or some ozone or something like that broke wide open. But other than that, no, we keep it moving pretty much year round. Even if the grass does go dormant from time to time, every other year or something like that. But it's not growing, but there's always work to do on property. So yeah, we do slow down, but we don't get any of that cold stuff.
So you all have warm season grasses down there. When is the peak growth for those warm season grasses?
The warmer, the faster it grows. So I know a lot of people with the cool season grasses, y'all are kicking butt in March, April, as soon as the ice thaws out and, you know, it's still 60 degrees outside and the sun's shining. Our grass hasn't even waken up yet. It doesn't wake up till probably about May. Mm. And then it just gets crazy. Talking to a lot of guys in the industry, for the first time, it was interesting for me because I'd never heard about people slowing down in June, July, August. We are double cutting in June, July, and August. Mm-hmm. This is probably the first year where we were questionable about whether or not we should be cutting, primarily because we had that drought. But down in Houston, we get 60 plus inches of rain a year. So it's usually never an issue. This year showed us differently. And also Harvey showed us that we can get 50 inches in 1 week. Ooh. So that's the wild world of Houston, Texas, living on the Gulf Coast.
Wow. Wow. Steven, you're down there in Texas as well, but you're a little bit north of Jamar. How about you guys?
Yeah. So, you know, I grew up in Houston and I know exactly what Jamar's talking about. I think one of the things down in Houston is you've got that higher humidity down in Houston. The temperatures, yeah, obviously don't get as cold as what they do here in Dallas. It's kind of being on a prairie. So we get that west cold fronts just come through. They'll blast this place. We get a lot of ice. I would say that, you know, I know Houston gets a lot of ice as well. The fronts that we get will, you know, they'll blast through here pretty quick, man. And first of all, nobody's out driving around on the roads because as soon as we get any kind of ice or snow in Dallas, I mean, it's like the whole town just shuts down.
Shut it down.
A lot like Jamar, you know, most of our lawns are primarily St. Augustine. So we're about 2 to 3 weeks away from going dormant with the grass. But, you know, during that growing season, that peak season that you brought up earlier, we're on that same schedule, that kind of April through July, August time frame, and then things begin to just kind of wane off for us.
Gotcha. Very nice. And then, Dan, over there in Florida, you guys are kind of like a similar latitude, but got a little bit more moisture over there. What's your peak season like?
So, yeah, our peak season is mostly after March. We'll start to get a lot more growth, and it will last all the way until September, October. So you'll have a lot of growth through that season. Really worst season is probably right after the rain showers of July, where that grass just continues to grow, especially if you're using like a bahia, where you can grow 5 inches in a week and you're trying to cut that off. And that's, you know, your tougher grasses. But St. Augustine, the same thing. You'll have it here grow a couple inches and you'll be mowing with your deck all the way up. And our slow season starts in October, starts to, you know, slow down a little bit. Growth is not as fast. And in November, normally we change our schedules from weekly cuts to biweekly cuts. And then towards the closer to March, we'll do like less services just because the grass is dormant. Especially if you're using like, or when you're cutting a bahia, where it just completely stops to grow.
Gotcha. Very interesting. Sandy, you saw that Dan and Ronnie down in Florida were having so much fun. So you decided to move down there, man.
Absolutely.
And you've only been there a few months. Is that right? What's your experience been so far?
Yeah, only a few months in. So I do actually have to rely on Dan and Ronnie's expertise to kind of help drive that boat for me. It's funny because I ask them all the time, every time I kind of see a property, take a quick picture of it, say, hey, what is this? Just because I'm still trying to differentiate the difference between Bahia and, you know, St. Augustine. Sometimes they could blend a little bit, but they've been super helpful in helping me try to determine that, you know.
Well, and Ronnie was telling us too, that it's like, they've got cousins and, you know, that it's like, it's Bahia, but it's slightly different strain. So I could see how that'd be confusing.
Yeah, because I've seen the thicker Bahia stuff and, you know, the thinner stuff too. So it's, you know, I'm relying on their expertise for sure. But I haven't had a full season here yet. So, you know, my understanding of the scheduling and how things are going to work down here, again, kind of relying on Danny and Dan and Ron to be able to kind of help me figure that out. So we'll see what happens when I get a full season under my feet here.
You'll have some fun.
Yeah.
You'll have some fun, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, something that's interesting too, and our conversations offline, is that they continue to tell me that even the difference between where they're located, I'm more towards the coast. So I may get a couple extra weeks compared to what they would as far as the slowdown. But my understanding is that we're going to continue to work even through the, you know, through the winter months.
That's really lucky. You know, I think us guys up here in the north, we kind of do somewhat of a cold stop. Would you agree with that, Sean?
Yeah, it's we got these cold season grasses. They start popping up mid-March, start reminding us that they're not completely dead. And then April, it just goes crazy. April, May, June, you got to double cut just about everything. July and August, it gets pretty hot. This year, we had a crazy drought. Just any rain that we got was just like a torrential downpour. Like, you know, we got like a month's worth of rain in 30 minutes, some crazy stuff like that this year. And so it ended up just washing off the properties more than soaking in. So we had a pretty rough July and August this year, just a lot of brown. really had to raise the decks and just cut everything high and let it stay tall. You know, got some pushback from customers and just had to explain and educate them a little bit on what was going on. Let's see, September really picked up. October, we were pretty solid for the first half, and then we got some really, really cold weeks the end of October. The grass just went dormant. We had a whole bunch of people say, hey, I think we're good for the season. And, you know, then the last week of October, everybody's hitting us back up. Whoa, 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 it got warm again. We need you back out here. So it's kind of been back and forth. We put everybody in through the week of Thanksgiving by default. Everybody's property is a little bit different. Their personal preference is a little bit different. So, you know, this year we just, we're doing kind of pay as you go. And so we just let people let us know when they think their lawn is done. But pretty much by the end of November, it's all over as far as grass season. You know, we try and line up some projects, basically clearing out things, resetting some garden beds and stuff like that through December, doing cleanup projects and leaves. But the grass is pretty much dormant December through February, even into mid-March or all the way through March, depending on the weather for us.
Yeah, yeah. I would basically echo that over here in Denver. We're basically exactly similar as you guys. I did want to just circle back real quick because you mentioned that when you did get rain, it was like torrential downpour. And that seems to be kind of common out here in Denver as well. It's like either we're getting a light rain where it's like, you know, barely reading on the, you know, barely accumulating anything, or it's like a torrential downpour. And what we started doing this year is using a soil conditioner. I think it's a local company here in Colorado called Revive. And I'm going to have to get back to you on exactly what it is, but basically it's some sort of surfactant that prevents that, you know, water from running off when we actually do get rain.
It helps kind of break up the soil a little bit.
Yeah. You know, because over time, you know, our soil, at least out here, if it's real dry, our soil will actually become hydrophobic. That water will run right off. And so we have to, you know, condition it with a soil conditioner to make sure that it can absorb.
We got a lot of clay out here. And so, yeah, it dries up, gets pretty hard and just basically becomes like a solid surface if it sits too long.
Absolutely.
You know, I think this year was definitely atypical for our area as far as how dry it was throughout the summer. Usually it's a little bit more balanced and the rain is kind of spread out more evenly. This year was definitely, it was a little wild. Definitely a learning curve for that one.
Yeah. The one thing that is constant is that it seems like there's not a typical year anymore, but I'm going to rein us back in here. And it kind of seems like we all have a slightly varied, you know, whether when our peak season is, when our slow season is, the length of our peak season, the length of our slow season, and when, what time of year maybe this kind of happens. So let's kind of jump into the big question. And I don't know about you guys, but my customers always are asking me, what do you guys do in the off season? What do you do in the winter? And I'm like, don't you worry about it. But Sandy, if my sources tell me right, down there in Florida, Electric Turf Pros is maybe getting into a little bit of Christmas lighting.
Yes, sir.
You want to talk a little bit about that and maybe what else you have on the docket for this winter?
Yeah, absolutely. So in my situation, you know, only being a few months in here, you know, it's been a little bit slower obtaining maintenance clients, of course, because it is the slowdown of the season. So most folks, you know, already have their folks lined up or their companies lined up to do their maintenance. So I figured I've always had a, you know, an interest in Christmas lighting, especially when I was up in South Carolina, since we do have an off season. I figured it'd be, you know, a great business to get into. Always had a little bit of a passion for it and admiration really for the folks that did do it. So I figured I kind of dabble a little bit into that this season. It's not a service that I am, you know, marketing or really going out of my way to sell, but I am positioning it to folks just so that I can, you know, learn, as you would say, by doing, right? So definitely setting up my house, a couple neighbors' houses, which are paying for it. But, you know, it's just a little bit of trying to get some experience and hopefully with the help of YouTube and Michael, who's a pro at it too, with Quiet Lawn. I think he calls it Holiday Lights by Quiet Lawn. So getting some knowledge from him, Steven sharing some knowledge as well. And just, you know, YouTube, of course, and just trying to pick up as much as I can to be as successful as I can in the Christmas lighting venture.
Yeah, very nice. I've always admired, like you mentioned, you know, the guys that put up those Christmas lights, and especially around the trees. I'm like, how do they get it so perfect? It's just, I don't understand it. So maybe one of you guys can tell me how it's done. But Dan, I think I saw that Electron maybe bought like 2,500 Christmas lights or something. What was that all about?
I have no idea. I have no idea. So you have to talk to Ronnie on that one. He's the guy. That's Ronnie.
That's Ronnie.
It seems like Ronnie was getting some advice from you, Steven. Have you guys done this before? Are you a couple years into this?
Yeah, we're 3 years into it. We kind of did a little bit of it the first year we were running. Last year, the business picked up. This year, we have just been... we've been mobbed with Christmas light jobs this year. It's funny how everything in the world's all just kind of interconnected, and your past experiences somehow or another can play out in the future. So I grew up in a house of, my dad is he's a mechanical engineer. We used to put the lights up on the house outside, and every light bulb was like perfectly straight and all this stuff. And that's the, you know, that's what I grew up in. And whenever we first started this business a few years ago, we did get into that winter season like you're talking about. And we were much smaller than we are now. And I thought, how are we going to generate revenue, right? During the slow season, what are we going to do? How are we going to make money? You know, how can we keep the people that we have on the team employed through the slow season, keep everybody's families fed? And that kind of became my mission. It was more about taking care of the people that work with us and making sure that they have a job and they can feed their families than it was about how are we going to, I don't know how to say it, but I mean, it's not a self-serving reason why we went into doing it. It was a means of survival, right, for what we do. And so we did it the first year, and it worked out great. You know, the lights were good. We were working with Ewing Irrigation here in Dallas. They've been great about providing materials to us, consulting with us. We went through the CLIPA certification, which is the Christmas Light Installer Professionals of America certification classes that helped us with learning about how to price the services, how to do the installations, how to make everything professional. It was a great program. So we were able to kind of put that stamp on our brand. And then we rolled that out into the second year. And we had about maybe 25 or 30 customers that second year. We had a couple different pricing plans. Like, people could buy the lights outright from us. We would purchase the lights. Then we would do the install. And we also got into renting the lights, where we actually own the lights, but yet we were renting them to clients at a different price. So we built out a few different packages. We did some research on other companies in the area and how much do you charge, right? Because when we got into doing it, I had no idea. You know, the people that worked with us, we had no idea. We'd never done it. We knew we did good work, but we didn't know how to price it. So we did a lot of work on that after that second year. And then this year has just been great to us because, first of all, we did a great job last year. So everybody that we serviced last year obviously wanted us back this year. And people talk. You know how it is. I mean, in all of the areas that we work in, if you're doing a good job at somebody's place, somehow or another, they're going to be out walking the dog one day and they're going to have a conversation with a neighbor and they go, "Oh, your lights look so good last year. And who did your lights?" "Oh, well, you know, that was EcoMo," and call them. And the next thing you know, the phone's ringing. So we've embraced it. It's been a good filler for us. And it will be until kind of that first, second week of December, you know, a couple of weeks before Christmas. And then the business will wane off. We'll be into the kind of the leaf cleaning season, et cetera, until we get back into the spring. But Sandy said it, it's enjoyable. There's something rewarding about doing that. And, you know, it's just like any landscaping project we do. I love to see the fruits of your labor and drive by a house that you did an install on a Friday night with your kids in the car. And it's just a proud feeling. So there's that part. There's keeping everybody employed. So that's what we're doing, man.
That's really amazing. Thank you for sharing all that. I don't know if I missed it. So are you still offering for them to buy it, or is it all rental based now?
Yeah. So we've kind of structured in two different ways, where we've had clients last year that just purchased the lights outright. So then this year, we're just basically charging labor and supplies like clips, garden stakes, things like that. You know, the stuff that the disposable items that kind of break after a year, they get from hot to cold, and they're just not good the next year. So we have a lot of clients that we store their lights for them. We have a service charge for that, where we store the lights year round, and then they've already purchased their lights. We've already custom cut them for what it is that we did. And then we have the other clients who just don't want to buy the lights outright. They just want to rent them from us. And then we, you know, our repeat clients, we have them marked. We know which houses they are. But with new clients, we'll get those 1,000-foot rolls of the C7, C9s, or C9s rather, sometimes C7s, but mostly C9s. And we'll go out there and we'll just custom cut them. The important part when you're doing Christmas lights, and you guys will probably learn this if you don't know this already, but when you go to take lights down at the end of the year, everybody's kind of in a hurry, right? So you're taking lights down and you're like throwing lights in the bucket, marking your lights, because that way you know what to do next year. Mm-hmm. We made that mistake the first year. we wanted to just go get all these lights down. We put them in tubs. We thought we labeled everything right. And we go to get the lights out the next year. And this is like the wrong house. You know, being organized with it. I'm not a very organized guy. So, but I'd concentrate on that. I'd make sure that when you take the lights down, you have it marked. Front of house. Yeah, strand number one from the southwest corner. Strand number two, et cetera. Otherwise, you're gonna find yourself in a world of hurt next year, 12 months later.
So, Jamar, are you going over and helping Steven with all these Christmas lights, or what are you doing during that off season?
Absolutely not.
Oh, come on, man.
No, we don't. We have not taken that leap into Christmas lights. We've been tugged on. We've been pulled. That gravity is tough to resist. But no, we've stayed out of it so far. Right now, we're still in the middle of our, we're mulching, we're cleaning out beds. For us, we do vegetable gardens as well. And so for a lot of people, in Houston, the prime time to start our vegetable gardens, it's right now, right? And then the people who are late or just hearing about the vegetable gardens, they usually don't get to us until about Christmas time. And so we're preparing their vegetable gardens for spring. And so for the most part, we still have a big group of our clients that we still mow and service their yard weekly. In my particular area, there's a lot of live oak trees, and these things are dropping leaves throughout the year. Matter of fact, our leaves down here don't really get a big leaf drop until the springtime. And so we're constantly, leaf cleanup is part of the regular maintenance, so to speak, for those who are on it. So we're still got a lot of people that are weekly, a lot of people that are bi-weekly. We only have a few people that are monthly, but the way we charge, we still get quite a few budgeted hours for that one visit per month. We do some of our people on a plan and we get one visit per month in January, December, January, and February. And those are maybe 2 hour cleanups, hour and a half cleanups or something like that. And we do charge accordingly, but it's just to tidy everything up at their house. I even tell people look, if you wait, we may be able to work out a deal because, a lot of people come to us late in the season, in the summer. It's just brutal on my guys to be moving around rock and shoveling all that stuff and digging holes and it's 102 degrees outside, you know what I mean? With that humidity. So a lot of times in the summer, we're not trying to do anything but mow. Just try to mow, stay cool, and don't do a whole lot of overexertion of your guys. If they need to have it, we'll have to charge accordingly, right? Our rates go up a little bit when it's higher outside. But I also pay my guys a little bit more on that paper performance once we hit that 100-degree weather. Because what I'm trying to do is to get them to slow down a bit, and I'm not trying to burn them out by the time we get to August. Because really, that's when I need them to be fresh is once we start really kind of getting into our landscaping and what we call, shoulder season type services.
That kind of blows my mind that, you say that November, December is kind of the best time to be starting your gardens when, up here, that's the time that we're ripping them out, So that's really, really cool.
Yeah, because we just kind of get cold fronts, right? So we get our cool season crops. Mm-hmm. We can get them on the ground. We can grow food here year round.
That's awesome.
Right? It's all about timing. We're seed starting for tomatoes after Christmas. But the other part about that, the flip side is that we need to get them in the ground February and March. Because by the time May hits and that humidity hits, the bugs wake up.
They got to be established.
And our tomatoes just don't like that humidity. And once the nighttime temperatures get above 75, they no longer will set fruit on the flowers.
Jamar, I got a question for you, man. Do you have a different rate for that? Or is it the same rate that you're charging for kind of your maintenance hourly man rate? What does that look like?
Right now, we don't. We've stuck to our regular man hour rate.
Okay.
But as we move forward and we get more of it under our belt, because a lot of it is because there's not a lot of people doing it, a lot of it is a learning curve.
Yeah.
For me, right? I'm tracking things, trying to figure out, okay, is bi-weekly good? Is it monthly? Should we do it weekly? I have a couple of ladies that we're at their house twice a week, deadheading, and that type of thing. And to pay $1,000 a month for that type of stuff, I can't even fathom.
Yeah.
Me personally, dropping that type of dough for some plants, right? If they don't survive in my garden on their own, But it's a learning process for us. So we're still figuring that out. But also there's a training aspect. So right now, a lot of it, I only really have one guy that I even trust with pruners, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's that other part. As we try to build this business and I remove myself from the field work, it gets difficult
to scale
on that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what one of the things we're looking into is like going to the local colleges and looking for, you know, horticulturalists or people who are studying horticulture and that type of thing and bringing them on as we become a bigger company.
That's awesome, man. I mean, Jamar, I can't wait until we kind of do our get to know you segment and we can really just deep dive into how you got started and how you've built, I think kind of what you're saying, kind of like your lifestyle brand. You know, last week you were wearing your long sleeve, Peaceful Garden long sleeve. And I saw that and I was like, man, I need one of those. Like, you know, it's just embodied coolness. So,
yeah, I'll tell you this. Like, so we did hire a branding company to come out and do kind of like rebrand. If you can look on our Instagram, you can see what our old logo was. My wife actually did that and it was fantastic, right? Like she has a great eye. She's a designer herself. But we heard everybody kind of complaining about the labor workforce and how they can't find anybody to hire or yada, yada, yada. And so when I went to these brand guys, this Prolific Brand Design is actually the name of the company that we went to. Ryan Kettering, sharp guy, guy knows human psychology. He knows people. I mean, our initial call with him was 2 hours long, trying to get to know me and my why and what makes me tick and how we communicate that to the customer, right? So that's how different this experience was, which I also learned a lot from. But when I went to him, I said, I wanted to create a brand that employees will feel proud to have to come work for. I wanted to create a brand and a look that when people saw our vans outside of their house that they go, I want them at my house. I want those guys to come cut my grass. I want those guys to build me a vegetable garden. And that aspirational feeling that we're the people to choose, that was the idea that we were going for. And so that was orchestrated and they executed that flawlessly. And it's not something, even the brand, it's not something I would pick, but you know, I'm not my customer, right? And that's another thing I've been learning for years.
I mean, your logo is awesome. It's simple. It's welcoming. It just embodies the brand really well. They did a fantastic job with that.
Yeah, thank you. I'll let him know. Matter of fact, he should be listening to the podcast. Ryan should be listening to the podcast.
Is he listening? I invited some people. I don't know if they're listening.
Yeah, long time listener, first time caller.
Well, thank you, Jamar. Sean, I think if I'm not mistaken, this is your first full season that you've been full time in your business. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm just taking notes tonight. vegetable gardens, that's not going to work in the wintertime here. So scratch that one out. But
it will. You just have to build a shed for it. That's it.
You got to take prepayments and start building their stuff indoors and you install in the spring.
There we go. Yeah, this is my first year doing this full time. I had a sales job last year. I had a crew out for me, but I actually I ended up just kind of stumbling, just kind of dumb luck into some larger projects last year that actually were drawing on me pretty heavily, working overtime in between my other job, and a lot of that was working with realtors, people flipping houses and trying to get stuff on the market. You know, the housing market was going crazy last year and people just seeing a couple of pictures for their posts online. And so we were pretty much just kind of creating blank canvases for these people. So, you know, they had just a house that had some work done to it. And so it was just kind of rough looking around the edges. So we just carve out a garden bed, put down mulch, maybe a couple anchor pieces, like certain tree or, you know, we'd put a bush or something to kind of cover up like the electrical boxes and things like that. Just kind of keep it simple. It was one day jobs in and out for the most part. And that worked really well for us last year. Obviously, the housing market has really shifted quite a bit this year and we're not seeing as much of that. So to be completely honest with you, you know, I'm learning a lot this year. We definitely have to come in with a better plan for it next season. We've got a couple larger projects lined up, and I'm starting to reach back out to people, and kind of what Jarmo was saying earlier, you know, seeing if we can offer some discounts for some of the projects that maybe we'd quoted out earlier. If the customer hadn't gone through with, it was more than they wanted to spend, hadn't gone through with anybody else. See if we can fit something in. It might make a little more sense to do it at a lower rate this time of year for us. It'll be a little faster, easier to move through, that kind of thing. Next year, we're definitely going to have a more thorough plan on what we're doing for revenue generation in the off season. This year, you know, a lot of it is actually, it's going to be really trying to set ourselves up for 2023. We've got some certifications that we want to get between now and then. And so a lot of it's going to be studying and taking some exams and things like that. I really want to get my pesticide license for next year. And so, you know, in Maryland, it's a pretty thorough process to get that. So we're going to be hitting that pretty hard here over the next few months.
You think Maryland's tough? You should hear about Florida's pesticide licensing program.
Oh yeah,
I heard a little bit from Dan. It does not sound bueno.
When you do the lawn and feed, right, or the when you spray it on their turf, that's where it gets really difficult. But if you're doing like garden beds, crack weeds like that, it's still a little difficult. I think Ronnie did the exam, went through all that stuff. It took him quite a bit of studying for it to get ready. I think it was like if it was 80 or 100 questions or something like that, he has to answer and try to do when he had his the herbicide license to spray in garden beds and stuff like that.
In Maryland, you know, our fertilizer exam, we had to study pretty extensively for that. You go take a test, they do it certain times a year. For the pesticide piece of it, they actually require either college courses towards it, or you have to go on and take one approved course that you can go on and online. Take some courses first to prove just that you can sit for the exam and then go study up and take the exam itself. So I'm planning on doing that. You know, we talked to, I'm not sure, one of the other episodes, I think we might have talked about the AGSA and certification. We want to get our home improvement certification as well. It allows us to do a little bit wider range projects when it comes to irrigation and things like that. So, you know, one of the other things that, you know, with Maryland, sometimes we get snow, sometimes we don't. You know, 2 years ago, we didn't get a single snow event. Even though we get some really cold temperatures throughout the winter, it makes it really hard to invest heavily in the snow equipment necessary to go full scale with snow removal. We do have a little, you know, an Ego push snow blower. Well, obviously we got all the hand tools and things like that. So smaller properties doing like sidewalks and walkways and that type of stuff we can handle. But it makes it difficult to really put down the investment necessarily to go full scale, quote unquote, snow removal in the wintertime. One of the things that we have played around with the past few years that has worked really well for us if you look at it with kind of a wider range of when you want the return, we use it more as marketing than anything else, because, you know, we are limited in what we can do. My wife's a nurse, and so, you know, we certainly have, we feel for all the first responders out there trying to get through any weather events. And so a lot of times I'll just send out messages on Facebook and to our local communities, letting people know, hey, if you're a nurse, doctor, firefighter, police officer, anything like that, needs to get out and there's a storm coming overnight, just let us know. We'll come help you out. We'll take care of it. You know, we're helping the community, and at the same time, we get a benefit out of it. A lot of people spread that around, and it gets us a lot of brand awareness. And so we have a lot of people reach out in the springtime and say, hey, I saw you, you know, saw you doing this and this, over the wintertime. Would love to get a quote on mowing. So we use it as a marketing component. You know, the amount of time that it takes us to go out and clear those properties, the return that we get off of that, you know, just from the exposure to it, a lot of times is a lot more than we would have gotten from paid marketing in a lot of ways.
I think that's really smart. I've thought about doing that, but never have actually pulled the trigger on doing it. You know, I think you're smart not to necessarily go full on into snow removal. My customers always ask me if we do snow removal. And I say, my response is no, I don't enjoy torture. So, you know, because you got to think about it. That snow removal.
We do free snow removal in Florida. Yeah. It's included in our plan.
That's really nice of you guys down there. Electron, man, 5-star service.
That's legit.
You know, you got to think though, these customers, if you're doing snow removal, they expect that snow to be off their driveway, off their sidewalks by 7 a.m. by the time they're taking their kids to school. So guess what? That means if you got 10 customers, you're starting at, you know, 3 a.m., 2 a.m.
Yeah, I've heard stories of some guys running pretty much a couple of days straight.
Yeah, I was caught in a storm in Buffalo one time, and man, those guys are out there all night long.
Up in Buffalo, I mean, you almost have to, the amount of snow that they can get up there in one event. I mean, if you don't start early, you're not going to be able to push it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Sean, we may need to compare notes because, you know, we're kind of in the same boat as you up north here. And one thing that we're looking to get into a little bit more this year and might be of interest to you guys, because I think you guys have quite a few trees around you. We're looking at getting into a little more tree pruning. And at first, it's like really kind of intimidating. You know, you think, oh, my liability insurance is going to go way up, you know, high risk, all that. You know, the nice thing is you get enough customers, you can really pick and choose your jobs. Your liability insurance really does not increase that much. And it's actually become one of my more satisfying, like favorite things, services to provide, because you think about like a bush trim, how satisfying that is when it's nice and tight and tidied up. You know, think about a big old 30-foot tree. You know, you get all that dead wood out, you know, you get all those cross branches cut out and everything and shaped up real nice.
Yeah, we've done a little bit of tree trimming. We got to be careful with it out here. Maryland, the legal limit without, you know, specifically having an arborist license is 20 foot maximum. So anything over 20 feet, we can't touch. But from bush to 20 feet, we're all about it. It's nice. It's a lot of fun. Definitely very satisfying, you know, being able to step back and look at the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially on those fruit trees, from what I understand, they really like to be trimmed in the winter. It's the best time to be trimmed. So I think we're really going to be focusing on that. And then kind of like you said, we're going to kind of lay some foundation for some bigger landscape projects, you know, whatever we can do when the snow allows. And then here's one that hasn't been mentioned yet. My business partner actually has used to own a painting business. And so we're going to leverage our customer base of, you know, 300 to 400 customers on our email list. And we're going to kind of blast that out and do a little bit of interior home painting throughout the winter.
I have a room. You want to come to Florida and do a room for me?
You know, if you pay for the flight, I might be able to make that work.
I got you. That's the easy thing.
Okay.
The flight's easy. You just paint it for free and we're good.
We'll talk. But yeah, so that'll be something that's a little bit different for me. But you know, like we said, you know, it's our slow time. You know, I'm ambitious. You know, I'm not afraid to work for a buck. So why not? You know, we got to make it through. That's actually kind of a perfect transition into the next topic that I want to cover here is we're not only business owners, but a lot of us actually work in the business, you know, manual labor, day in, day out, heat, cold, everything that comes with that. So I'd like to know, how do you guys kind of charge, I'm going to call it our metaphorical batteries, you know, we're all electric, but we also have this physical and mental battery. How do you guys kind of recharge that during the off season? Who wants to start off here?
Well, see, for me, you know, I've got two young girls. I've got a 5-year-old and a 1-year-old. So, I mean, they're everything for us. So in my case, where I still have a full-time career and, you know, starting the business back up here in Florida, it's definitely important to always be recharging and spending time with the family as much time as we spend on the business, right? Any time that I can spend with them, whether it's at home coloring or doing whatever we can, you know, to spend time together, I think it's important for me. And we try to make the best of, you know, the time that we do have together. So try to focus only on them and not, you know, being on our phones or, you know, texting or crazy things like that. So just be super intentional about the time that I spend with the family. But anything I can do with them is a recharge for me in general, because they're my why.
That's awesome, man. that brings up a really good point. You know, we may need to recharge during the off season, but really maintaining that work-life balance throughout is also really important. Jamar, how about you? I'm pretty sure you're a big family guy as well. How do you recharge those batteries?
Honestly, we talked about vegetable gardens earlier. One of the things I do, because I am a firefighter, I'm a paramedic, we see a lot of life and death. We see a lot of tragic stuff. We see a lot of, and it's in a big city. So I'm not one of these people that sit around. Like, we go, like, we run. Like, when I'm at the station, it is just go time all the time. So when I come home, I will decompress in my garden. I go out, you know, and just kind of take a deep breath. And I sit out in my garden, man, and I'll look at the life. I look at the butterflies, bees, you know, just grab a little snack of something that's growing, you know, just kind of appreciate life as it is. And then, you know, I go in and I do appreciate and absolutely love my kids. They're the most adorable things in the world. They're always laughing. And I got a dog. I got an old dog. He's 13 years old. Name is Cole. We don't take walks anymore because he's like, I'm too old for that nonsense. But it doesn't matter. He's giving me that wag of that tail. He's always, you know, happy to see me. You know, and then my wife, she may not be always happy to see me, but she loves on me thoroughly. But no, she's absolutely great. She's super nurturing. I'm just blessed to have great people around me. And, you know, with that being said, I even try to just keep great people around me. Like, and so other than that, I don't do anything because I tell people all the time, like, I work so hard because I'm lazy. Right. So when it's time for me not to work, I don't want to do nothing. Right. And that's a grammatically correct term. Nothing. I don't want to do nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So that's how I recharge, is by working real hard. I work about 50 to 80 hours a week as a firefighter, paramedic, and then I'm working my business another whatever it takes. Sleep when I can, and then wrestle with the kids and the wife when I can. Right. That's how I recharge.
Hey, we'll all sleep when we're dead. Right.
That's right. So one guy that I'm pretty sure never does nothing, Steven, I mean, we're going around asking, how do you recharge your batteries? But, you know, as Dan can attest, you send Steven a message at 1 a.m., 2 a.m., and you're getting a response. Do you ever recharge those batteries, Steven?
I do. Yes. I'll be completely honest with you, man. I love to work. I love to stay busy. I've always got projects going on. My wife knows me well. I'm a hobby guy, so I am honestly always finding something to do to fill my time. With that being said, yes, I mean, we like to go ski as a family. That's something that we enjoy to do together. We typically go in the springtime. We've gone a couple times in the winter, but it's just been so cold and I can't stand the cold. So yeah, we try to travel when we can. You know, our kids, we've got a kid in college. We've got another one that's going into college. And we've got one that'll soon be going into high school. So everybody's kind of going, you know, in different directions right now. So it makes it tricky to get everybody all together. But, you know, we're looking forward to this holiday season. It's great. Our son comes home from college. And there's nothing that I enjoy more than just having all of our family around a table together for dinner. You know, that's how I decompress. And I absolutely make time for that. You know, these kids grow quick and I love the kids and I always want to relish that time when they're young and us spending time together. But yeah, to your point, I mean, generally, if you send me a message at 1 a.m., I'm probably going to answer. I'm probably up doing something. It's just the way I'm wired, man.
Nothing wrong with that. Dan, you're another hardworking guy, man. You not only help run Electron, but you also have a full-time job that takes you all over this country. When do you find time to recharge those batteries and how do you do that?
It's been a difficult, since starting Electron, it's been very difficult because if it's during growth season and if it's raining, I have to come in and we'll have to step up and work on the weekends and try to keep up with any work that's, you know, got behind because of rain or whatever it was. It's a little challenging at that point, right? But what I've found is, like, since I travel Monday through Friday, being home, it's the, like, my mentally shut off and chill for a little bit. If it's a day, it's a day. But if it's normally been Sundays after church, wind down and just chill with the kids, the wife, catch up with everything that's happened during the week. And just try to just relax a little bit on that Sunday. That's my wind down every week. Getting back home, you know, most of the time Saturday is always busy. I have laundry things to do with the wife and the kids, go out and do things, try to interact with everybody and the family. And that's the hardest thing when you travel. You lose a lot of the time during the week. So what I found the best thing to do for me is work really damn hard when I'm away. So when I'm home, I'm home. I can forget about everything else. And sometimes when I'm home, if you calling me, I probably won't answer as much or whatever, because it's I do that during the week 24/7. The work I do now is I have to communicate with people across the world over in Malaysia. So I'll be up texting them all the way up until 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, working on projects. And then when I'm home, though, that's it. I'm home. I don't worry about anything else. Everything else can wait until Monday and then go from there. That's how I recharge. Just again, just being with the family, hanging out, barbecuing. I love barbecuing. I love having people over. I like to serve people, to have people over, make food, have that, you know, get together. And it's one of my favorite things. So I can't wait until we get to hang out and we all can eat some food, eat some barbecue, have a barbecue runoff or something.
Fish, I can't wait for the next barbecue. I'm only 30 minutes away.
Hey, you never show up. You forget that I travel. So I'll be honest with you guys. My favorite barbecue is a Texas style barbecue.
There it is.
Right?
Well, I'm not surprised.
Salt and pepper, a little bit of garlic. I don't like garlic that much. Salt and pepper is my favorite seasoning. And most of the time, Texas always has that. So Texas style barbecue and then a little bit of a Kansas City barbecue is really, really good too. Kansas City, Missouri.
Sean, do you guys barbecue up there?
We take the best of whatever we like and we mix that up.
You don't mind getting on the barbecue every now and then. What else do you do, my man, to, you know, kick the shoes off?
To recharge, I like getting out in nature, man. Just getting away from it all. I'm on the phone 24/7. That's probably something I need to work on as this company grows. But I try to make myself as accessible as possible to my customers. So, you know, I got people sending me Facebook messages at 11 o'clock, 1 in the morning. If I'm awake and I see it and I'm not doing anything, I'm jumping on there. I'll respond. But every now and then, you know, I just got to reset. I just shut it off. And this past weekend, I needed a little break. Got together with some buddies and we went out to Assateague Island. It's a barrier island, out here in Maryland. I don't know. I'm sure nationally, people have probably heard of Chincoteague just because some of the stories that have been written about, like the ponies and things like that, the wild ponies running around. Chincoteague and Assateague, it's a connected island. And you just get away. There's very little cell reception out there. And you just
I've been meaning to ask you about this, Sean. You said you like getting out in nature, but it looked like you got your ass kicked by nature a little bit last week. What happened?
Nature beat me up a little bit this weekend, man.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, so I know this is an all electric podcast, but so my business partner's got a canoe with a jet engine in it that he installed in there. He's an engineer. He likes to screw around and play with some toys. And so
canoe?
It's a canoe. It's a fiberglass canoe, but it's got one of the wide backs on there. He dropped in a gas-powered jet engine into this thing. And
Boeing 737 engine? Something like
that. It was the largest jet ski motor that he could find, and he put it into this thing. So this canoe, if you put two people in it, you get one person up front. You basically you tie a rope around your hand so you don't fly out of the damn thing. Basically, you put somebody in front to help just level the plane on it. You can crank this baby up to about 27 miles an hour in a canoe skimming across the top of the water. So we've done it. We've centered on rivers and stuff before where it's relatively flat water. We were out on Assateague Island looking out at the ocean and I think we can take Handsome Ron. That's the name of the boat, Handsome Ron. I think we can take Handsome Ron out into the ocean. And we were having some issues being gas. Got a little wet in the spark plugs in there and couldn't get them firing. We're looking at this beautiful, calm ocean all morning, trying to fiddle around with this stupid engine and finally got it running, we thought. And so by the time we drag this thing down right to the edge of the water, we're about to drop it in. I look at him. I said, Hey, Green, I'm with you 100% if you're in it, but this is your boat. This is your baby. I don't know if this is a good idea. The wind's picked up a little bit. These waves are getting a little bit bigger. How upset are you going to be if Handsome Ron ends up at the bottom of the ocean? And he says, get in the damn boat. We're going out. So we push it into the water. I hop in and we're just sitting right at the edge of the surf there. And I'm waiting for him to fire it up. I'm like, hit throttle, man. Now or never, baby. You got to hit it. And the biggest wave I'd seen all day just curled up. And I was just a sitting duck on the bow of this boat. And we were going nowhere. The engine just wasn't firing. This thing crested and cracked me right across the nose. Busted my nose up. Got a little mild concussion. And it sank the boat right to the bottom. Luckily, it was still at the edge of the surf. Wow. One wave completely filled it. We hooked up a tow rope to the truck and to the edge of the canoe and just pulled it out. Wow. We had a pump on it, right? He's got a battery pack in there. We've got an electric pump that works pretty well, but the waves just kept on coming and filling it up faster than we could pump it out. So we pulled the truck, got it up onto the beach, let it soak itself out. And
so you're telling me an electric trailer, pump saved the gas motor?
That's what I got out of that story.
You know, we've taken that same boat on a couple other trips. Last year in the wintertime, we took it down to a place called Capers Island down in South Carolina near Charleston. Similar thing, just putting it in stupid situations that it shouldn't be in and trying to survive. And that's just kind of, that's our way to
reset. That's how you recharge your batteries. Nice. Thanks for sharing that. I don't know about you guys, but I think we did this this topic a little bit of justice, man. We covered a lot of stuff. You know, Jamar, as promised every week, dropped his little nuggets. And I think we provided a lot of value to our listeners. So if you want to find more of this quality content, you can find Electric Lawn Talk on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Thank you all for listening to Electric Lawn Talk. This was episode 5 of season 1. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on all your podcast catchers. And don't forget, Sandy,
always be charging, baby.
Take care, y'all.
Thanks for listening to Electric Lawn Talk. Don't miss the next episode. Be sure to subscribe, and while you're at it, help spread the word by leaving a rating and review.